Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to the Security Nexus Deep Dive. We take a stack of sources, articles, research, our own notes, and really get into the weeds to pull out the most important insights so you can get informed fast. Think of us as your guides, you know, navigating the complex and always shifting world of security. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a really striking event that just unfolded on June 1st, 2025. Ukraine's huge drone attack on Russian airbases, reportedly codenamed Operation Spiderweb.
And this wasn't just like another headline. It's a powerful real-world demonstration of a significant change happening right now in warfare and defense. I mean, the rise of asymmetric aerial threats, especially drone swarms.
Absolutely. It feels like a pivotal moment. And for this deep dive, we've drawn on some excellent analysis. We've got reporting from PBS News, The Washington Post, specifically Warren P. Strobel. There were insights from Neil Hart, writing for The Strategist. That's from the Australian Strategic Policy Institute. Also pieces from Brooke Beecher at Built In, technical details from Maris Tech, and info from NSIN featuring Taylor Crowley. So a good range of sources. Right. And our mission today is clear. We want to unpack exactly what happened during Operation Spiderweb. We need to understand why it has such profound implications and explore what these sources tell us about the vulnerabilities it exposed and the urgent responses needed, particularly for, you know, Western defenses. Just quickly, is the Security Nexus, we're a Maryland-based national security consultancy. Our whole mission is really to inform and educate through clear, accessible knowledge on things like cyber threats, hybrid warfare, strategic policy. You can always find more about our work at thesecuritynexus.net.
Okay, so let's start with the operation itself. Sources like PBS News confirm that on June 1st, Ukraine launched attacks targeting several Russian air bases deep inside the country.
And the outcome was... well, it was pretty significant, wasn't it? PBS News reported over 40 Russian aircraft destroyed or damaged. And we're talking critical assets here, strategic bombers like the 295s and 222Ms. And maybe even more importantly, those key command and control planes, the A-50 AACS.
Yeah, exactly. And while Ukraine reportedly put the damage in the billions and, you know, Russia disputed the scale, the sheer number of high-value aircraft hits seems undeniable based on these reports.
What really stands out for me from the sources is just how asymmetric this attack was. Warren Strobel in the Washington Post really highlights this. Ukraine used drones costing less than $1,000 each. Less than $1,000.
It's incredible. And PBS News and Strobel detailed the ingenuity involved, too. Some drones were apparently smuggled close to the targets inside Russia, launched sometimes from commercial trucks using simple wooden containers.
Wow. Think about that. Incredibly inexpensive, almost rudimentary delivery methods used against aircraft worth hundreds of millions of dollars each. It's just an extreme cost imbalance.
And it wasn't just basic drones either. PBS News pointed out the sophistication. These things had highly automated capabilities, described as a kind of hybrid of human oversight and AI control.
Right, so they could follow pre-programmed routes autonomously, even if they lost their signal.
Exactly. A capability PBS noted just wasn't really feasible 5 years ago, and Strobel's reporting added that the planning was extensive. Took 18 months, apparently. Involved getting those drones positioned covertly near the airfields.
And PBS News even had those photos, didn't they? Aircraft covered by old tires on the ground.
Yeah, maybe a crude attempt at protection, or perhaps trying to confuse automated targeting systems. Clearly didn't work against this kind of threat, though.
So this attack perfectly illustrates that concept of asymmetric warfare.
Definitely. As Strobel and PBS News explain it, it's fundamentally about a smaller, or maybe less conventionally powerful force, using unconventional means to gain an advantage over a larger one.
The sources draw parallels to classic David versus Goliath scenarios, obviously. But Strobel points to more recent examples, too. The 9/11 attacks, right? Where a plot costing maybe a few hundred thousand dollars triggered a U.S. response costing trillions.
And we see it today with, say, the Iranian-backed Houthis. They're using low-cost drones and missiles against very expensive naval assets in the Red Sea, or even Israel's pager operation against Hezbollah, sophisticated, low-cost, but causing widespread disruption.
The core takeaway here, and this comes through in Strobel and Neil Hart's piece in The Strategist, is this completely inverted cost-benefit curve.
Right. General Brian Fenton is quoted by Strobel pointing out that adversaries use $10,000 one-way drones that we shoot down with $2 million missiles. It's unsustainable.
And Hart says something similar, contrasting maybe a few cents per shot for some counterweapons versus thousands or millions for traditional interceptors.
It's a fundamental asymmetry. And Strobel warns that adversaries from big players like China down to non-state militias, they're all taking notes. They see this works.
Strobel specifically argues drones have become the asymmetric weapon of choice. They're cheap, they're widely accessible, you can pilot them remotely, or they operate with increasing autonomy. He contrasts that with cyber weapons, where the physical impact, so far at least, has been less dramatic.
And Operation Spiderweb wasn't just, you know, a few individual drones scattered about. It seems to have utilized swarm tactics, which really multiplies the threat level.
Okay, this is where it gets really interesting. What is a drone swarm? Exactly. It's more than just a lot of drones flying together, right?
Exactly. Brooke Beecher at Built In and Maris Tech explain it well. It's multiple unmanned vehicles working together as a single unified system. They can be controlled by one operator or act autonomously through, like, hive mind software. They're constantly communicating, coordinating movements, making collective decisions.
So it's not like every drone is doing the same thing.
No, not necessarily. Beecher highlighted that. In a swarm, you might have some drones doing intel gathering, others engaging targets, maybe some doing electronic warfare, different roles.
And the intelligence behind them, it's inspired by nature.
Yeah, Maris Tech and Beecher both mentioned that. Think of how schools of fish or flocks of birds move in unison. They use complex algorithms. Things like ant colony optimization are mentioned to maintain formation and cohesion. Maris Tech described it as a blend of human and artificial intelligence. You don't need the algorithm names, but the key is they act like one intelligent entity.
Okay, so why are these swarms so effective then?
Well, Hart and Beecher explain their power lies in being decentralized, autonomous, and crucially, capable of overwhelming defenses that are designed to handle one, maybe two targets at a time. Hart notes current systems just get saturated.
Overwhelmed by sheer numbers.
Precisely. And Maris Tech points to studies showing swarms increase lethality while actually reducing losses compared to sending in single drones.
So they offer scalable, resilient attacks. Hart and Beecher noted that. And Ukraine's success with those FPV drones first-person view, which often have some autonomy or AI, like PBS News and Maris Tech reported, that shows how relatively inexpensive platforms can achieve huge impact when used in these coordinated ways.
Yeah. Maris Tech emphasized they act as a force multiplier, just overpowering enemies through coordinated mass action. Hart added they can coordinate complex attacks from multiple directions at once, finding gaps in traditional air defenses.
And this tech is moving fast.
Incredibly fast. Maris Tech talks about rapid market growth, and they mention the U.S. DoD's replicator strategy, which is basically about mass-producing cheap, expendable drones.
Okay, so what does this all mean for countries like the U.S.? This Ukraine strike, even though it targeted Russia, it seems to have exposed some pretty significant vulnerabilities in Western defenses. Sources like Strobel and PBS News are calling it a major wake-up call.
It really drives home the point made by Bradley Bowman. He's with the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, quoted by Strobel. He basically said, that very same strike can be conducted against us.
Right. And Strobel, drawing on analysis from folks like Jason Matheny at RAND, listed specific U.S. assets that look vulnerable. Strategic bombers, fighter jets sitting out in the open at bases like Minot or Barksdale, strategic missiles in their silos, even submarines when they're docked in port. PBS News added high-value weapons and tech just sitting on military bases.
And it's not just military targets. Strobel also highlighted the vulnerability of critical civilian infrastructure. Think energy grids, transport hubs, shipyards, the things our economy and society depend on.
And here's that mismatch again. Strobel pointed out, you know, spending billions on traditional platforms, fancy fighter jets, proposed missile defense systems like that Golden Dome, that doesn't automatically protect you from these low-cost drone attacks.
Yeah, PBS News explained why traditional defenses struggle. These drones fly low, they fly slow, they can be hard to pick out from, like birds on radar, and they often come in numbers designed specifically to overwhelm those defenses.
What's particularly worrying is the domestic threat angle Strobel detailed.
That's a big one. Unlike ICBMs fired from overseas, drones can be launched from inside a country's borders, as PBS News noted.
Strobel raised the possibility of adversaries infiltrating the U.S., building weapons here, or using container ships carrying drones into major ports like Long Beach. He cited a 2018 study showing just how hard it is to effectively screen all those shipping containers.
And this isn't just theoretical. Strobel reminded us of actual incidents here in the U.S. Unidentified drones flying over sensitive sites in New Jersey, including a military research facility, and even President Trump's golf club. And those reports of drones buzzing F-22s parked out in the open at Langley Air Force Base?
It seems like a core structural problem, according to Strobel and retired General Glenn Van Herk, former NORTHCOM commander, is that domestic counter-drone authority mostly sits with law enforcement.
Yeah, with the DOD's authority largely stopping at the base perimeter fence line, that creates gaps.
And Stacey Pittijohn from CNAS, speaking to Strobel, raised concerns about state actors, like China, using huge numbers of cheap drones in a conflict, maybe over Taiwan, to get effects similar to expensive missiles against parked aircraft.
Mm-hmm. And General David Alvin, the Air Force chief, acknowledged to Strobel that while hardening bases is always needed, current capabilities just aren't where they need to be to meet this specific challenge right now.
Okay, so if drone swarms are the problem, what's the counter? We need solutions.
Well, Neil Hart in The Strategist really dives into high-power microwave weapons, HPMs, as a critical part of the answer. The experts he cites emphasize this urgent need for a layered, scalable defense strategy with HPM systems really at the core.
High-power microwaves. Okay, how do these actually work?
Hart explains it pretty clearly. They emit directed bursts of electromagnetic energy. The idea is to disable the drone's electronics while it's still in the air. He used the analogy of a microwave oven, but, you know, operating over hundreds or thousands of meters, zapping the circuits, no physical impact needed.
And the advantage against swarms.
That's key, according to Hart. Unlike missiles or guns that usually engage one target at a time, HPMs can potentially disable massive swarms in a single go just by sweeping their beam across the attacking formation.
Wow, so it's faster.
Speed of light engagement, Hart calls it. Plus, they're highly scalable, software-defined, which means you can update them rapidly as drone tactics evolve. Hart also mentioned they can be more mobile, modular, and focus energy better.
And this is where they really flip that cost equation we talked about.
Exactly. Hart states the cost per engagement is trivial, maybe just a few cents, limited only by the power source a generator or mains electricity. It's a complete reversal from spending thousands or millions on interceptor missiles or artillery shells. Those just aren't cost-effective against cheap drones, and they need complex resupply. HPM changes that dynamic.
But it's not a magic bullet.
No, Hart is careful to stress that. HPM isn't a silver bullet on its own. It needs to be part of a layered defense. You combine it with kinetic weapons, electronic warfare, other directed energy systems. You need that mix to be adaptable against threats that are constantly changing.
So the path ahead, it requires more than just new tech. It needs fundamentally new thinking. Both Hart and Strobel seem to stress that point.
Absolutely. The core lesson from Ukraine, according to PBS News and Hart, is the speed of battlefield innovation now. It's happening in weeks, not years. Adaptations are incredibly brisk.
Which means what? Relying on Cold War thinking or these slow, decades-long acquisition cycles? That's just not going to cut it anymore.
Right. Hart and Strobel warn that's a recipe for failure. Hart is really clear. The drone swarm threat isn't some future hypothetical. It's operational now.
So, based on these sources, what are the concrete steps needed? Investing heavily in protecting our big-ticket assets, hardened shelters, decoys like PBS News and Strobel suggested.
Distributed basing, too, so you don't lose everything in one hit. PBS News highlighted that vulnerability.
And rapidly developing and fielding these AI-enhanced HPM systems, advanced electronic warfare tools, as Hart advocates.
And, critically, sorting out effective domestic drone defense policies. Because, as Strobel pointed out, even U.S. airfields are vulnerable to threats launched from inside our own borders.
So, ultimately, it really isn't just about new technology. It's about that new thinking Hart and Strobel concluded with.
Mm-hmm.
The era of asymmetric aerial warfare is here.
It has definitely arrived. And trying to defend 21st century targets with mindsets and, frankly, procurement processes stuck in the 20th century, it's just not viable. Hart concludes that speed, and acquiring, deploying, and constantly adapting counter-drone capabilities is paramount. And collaboration with allies is essential, too.
Okay. So this deep dive into Operation Spiderweb has really laid bare the potent reality of these asymmetric drone swarm threats and the significant vulnerabilities they expose, especially in Western defenses that were maybe designed for a different era of conflict. We've seen the urgent need for rapid adaptation, for new strategies, prioritizing capabilities like high-power microwave systems, but within a layered defense.
And as we wrap up, here's something to think about. That speed of technological adaptation we've discussed, what Ukraine demonstrated, the kind of rapid countermeasures needed, this is reshaping global security at an unprecedented pace.
So what does this mean for traditional military power structures? For defense spending priorities going forward, how do societies and defense organizations, often built for slower, more deliberate change, actually adapt? Especially when the cycle of battlefield innovation and counter-innovation is now measured in weeks.
Something to definitely keep mulling over. We hope this deep dive into the source material has been valuable for you. You can find more insights like this from the Security Nexus over at thesecuritynexus.net.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.